From World Radio and the team that brings you the world and everything in it, this is the Legal Docket Podcast.
U.S. Border Patrol agent Gomez, can I help you?
This is Jenny Ruff calling for George.
Hi, Jenny. This is George. How are you?
Good. How are you doing?
George Gomez has been a Border Patrol agent in El Paso, Texas for 13 years. When it's time for his shift, he puts on a protective vest and gun belt, grabs his vehicle keys and a pair of binoculars, night vision goggles if it's an evening shift. His tour of duty assignment is urban. Other agents may be assigned to a rural area, and yet others remote. With urban, his position is right on the border. An urban assignment means a strong presence of border agents.
We literally have agents positioned within hundreds of yards of each other within eyesight in order to deter entries from coming in illegally.
A concrete canal divides El Paso from Juarez, a city in Chihuahua in northern Mexico.
The Rio Grande is really not a deterrent. It's not a mighty river. The water usually comes up just to your ankles. And if you can make it across the river and scale that 18-foot wall, you're going to blend in.
If assigned a rural area, an agent patrols farm and ranch land.
Those areas, agents, you have a little bit more time to make an apprehension. Interstate 10 is the major roadway that cuts right through the middle of El Paso. Whether it be someone here illegally, narcotics, human smuggling, what have you, they try to take that route of egress to get out of the El Paso.
And if assigned the remote area?
And that's going to be your largely desert, mountains, really harsh terrain. Out there, you really need to be out there on an ATV, horse patrol, or even we'll call in for helicopter support if we need to.
Agents must stay vigilant.
We found out through intelligence that the spotters on the other side of the Rio Grande are constantly watching the agents. And if they see you as a weak link, that's usually where they're going to try and make an illegal entry or run their narcotics through your area of responsibility.
When Gomez spots and stops individuals crossing illegally, then what?
We'll take him to the nearest Border Patrol station or the processing center. And on a case-by-case basis, individually, we'll start running everybody's fingerprints, records checks, and then everybody gets processed accordingly depending on their immigration and or criminal history.
Gomez says Border Patrol trains agents for different scenarios they might encounter, more than other law enforcement agencies he's worked for.
In the Federal Law Enforcement Academy, the Border Patrol historically has been known to be one of the toughest law enforcement academy for federal agents.
5.5 months worth of training in Artesia, New Mexico.
And just because you graduate the academy does not mean that you're a well-rounded Border Patrol agent. Your training still continues even once you hit the field and you're out here as a regular Border Patrol agent.
I flew to El Paso in mid-March for a ride-along with Border Patrol so I could see all this for myself. But en route, Border Patrol sent me a notification, one I didn't get until El Paso when I took my phone off airplane mode. Border Patrol canceled. COVID. The agency was too busy scrambling to respond to the spreading virus to deal with me. So I found a cab driver to take me around instead to learn more about a case that made it to the Supreme Court. Twice.
I, Clarence Thomas.
I, Sonia Sotomayor.
I, Stephen Breyer.
I, Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
I, Brett M. Kavanaugh, do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
Do solemnly swear.
That I will administer justice
without respect to persons.
That I will support and defend the Constitution of the United States.
And that I will well and faithfully discharge
the duties of the office on which I am about to enter.
So help me God.
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 Welcome to Legal Docket. I'm Jenny Ruff.
And I'm Mary Reichert. This podcast is from the team that brings you the world and everything in it.
The Honorable, the Chief Justice, and the Associate Justices of the Supreme Court of the United States.
Come with us inside the world of the Supreme Court as we look more deeply into current disputes and how they make a difference to your life.
All persons having business before the Honorable, the Supreme Court of the United States.
We've chosen a handful of cases from this past term that we think you'll find thought-provoking and worthy of deeper consideration. Today, a case about a cross-border shooting. A U.S. Border Patrol agent shot and killed a Mexican teenager who was standing on Mexican soil. Can the boy's parents sue the Border Patrol agent for money damages? That's known as a Bivens action.
God save the United States and this honorable court.
Support for the Legal Docket podcast comes from listeners like you. World is grateful for your generosity, which makes possible the journalism that powers this program. WNG.org/donate.
You're not on El Paso, huh?
No, I'm from Washington, D.C.
Uh-oh.
I'm hoping you could just take me to somewhere along the border, show me the fence, drive me around a little bit. Is that possible?
No problem.
Okay, good.
I did have one specific request.
Can you take me to the bridge where 10 years ago the little boy was shot at the border?
On June 7th, 2010, a Border Patrol agent named Jesus Mesa Jr. shot and killed Sergio Hernandez. I called Sergio a little boy. He wasn't that little. He was 15, but still a boy, an unarmed boy. Sergio's parents sued Agent Mesa in the United States.
That's the bridge. See the bridge coming all over from over there?
That's the El Paso del Norte Bridge?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
The El Paso del Norte Bridge, Pass of the North. Here, people cross from Juarez to El Paso or cross from El Paso to Juarez every day. They cross by car and foot to go to work, to school, to shop, to visit family. Chaos and clutter, hustle and bustle. An adjacent train trestle called Black Bridge crosses nearby, the scene of the tragic shooting so many years ago.
A U.S. Border Patrol agent shot and killed a 15-year-old Mexican boy after that.
So what happened at the Rio Grande? Well, the facts are disputed, so we'll tell both sides of the story. Let's talk about the circumstances that brought about the shooting. The boy's parents say Sergio was playing a game with friends. Run across the border to the U.S. side, touch the fence, run back without getting caught. Kind of like a game of chicken.
Yeah, I mean, what kid hasn't played some version of that game? Keisha Branch works for Abara Borderland Connections, a nonprofit helping asylum seekers. She spends her days at shelters in El Paso and shelters in Juarez. She works closely with migrants and Border Patrol agents. All that to say, she's familiar with the area and the dichotomy of working with both sides.
There are some kids that play at the border. The border in New Mexico, in Anapra, there's a community right beside the border wall. There's a lot of land and there's a trash pile. And so sometimes the moms will go out and pick things out of the trash pile for their homes, for household items. There are people that go into that space. When we go to visit the wall, there's some kids that come up to the wall and they talk to us and we'll just have conversations with them. So yeah, there are kids that play in that area, but they play in that area because it's their backyard.
But that's in Anapra. What about downtown in the Rio Grande Canal by the bridge where the shooting happened? According to my cab driver, it's not generally an area where kids play.
Oh, do the kids play around the fence, or around the border?
Oh, no.
No?
No, they don't. They don't let them get near.
They don't let them get near?
So that leads us to the other side of the story. Border Patrol says Sergio was a coyote, helping undocumented people illegally cross into the United States. Coyotes often use coordinated distraction techniques, draw the agent's attention away from his surroundings.
Victor Manjarez was the chief Border Patrol agent out of El Paso when the shooting occurred. He's now retired.
We used to call those, and they still do, they would call it a sacrificial group. Send someone across or a group of people across to get the agent to react. Get the agent to start chasing a group. And then what they do is, as soon as the agent leaves that high visible position, they send whatever they wanted to send, what the real intent was. It's almost like a diversion. So that happens all the time.
A dangerous game.
The game of cat and mouse.
The boys ran back and forth across the border. Agent Mesa detained one of Sergio's friends. Sergio ran back to the Mexican side. He hid behind a pillar under the train trestle. That's when Agent Mesa shot him in the face.
Mesa says Sergio and his friends were throwing rocks. Both Menjarez and George Gomez, the agent I talked with at the beginning of this episode, say agents are trained for physical assaults. Here's Gomez.
So there's different scenarios that we run that they'll put us through training. Obviously, first is seek cover, drive away from the area, run, seek cover, and back up, call for backup.
De-escalate aggressive behavior. Here's the thing. I don't want to downplay rock throwing. David took out Goliath with a rock. Agent Mesa may very well have been in danger. Victor Manjarrez.
You know, if he's getting rocked and he's got his, he's hunched over the guy that he was arresting, and you got your back towards, man, you're really at risk.
Even under the high pressure of split-second decision-making, the use of lethal force here has been criticized. Bystanders' video captured the fatal shooting. In the video, Sergio is unarmed. Again, Keisha Branch, who works at the border.
The story that came out in the news is different from the story that we hear from the agents themselves. So I have no answers.
Sergio's parents, of course, do want answers and a legal remedy. Remedy meaning an award of damages.
The family believes the U.S. Constitution guarantees Sergio certain rights. Now, the Constitution of the United States sets out the framework for the American government.
And the various rights people have with respect to the government.
Right. And the Constitution applies to more than U.S. citizens.
The preamble, the very beginning of the Constitution says, we the people of the United States. And so it doesn't specify that.
Melvin Odie is a constitutional law professor at Faulkner University.
But it's generally talking about, and the way the courts interpret these things, it's generally talking about the people who comprise the United States.
We, the people of the United States.
People, citizens, resident aliens, international travelers in this country on holiday or for business.
When you're in the United States, those protections apply to you. But when you go back to wherever your home country is, those protections do not apply to you.
United States, meaning?
And of course, that's going to be, you know, the sort of continental United States, but it'll also include the U.S. territories, the special maritime jurisdiction of the United States, which would be like on the seas. As far as the borders, the Constitution applies within our borders and, again, sort of the territories that we control.
Chris Galindo is one of the lawyers who represented the Hernandez family. Here's a clip from a video called Justice for Sergio. Audio in Spanish here from a Univision news investigation.
¿Puedes demandar al gobierno americano? ¿Puedes demandar a la gente Mesa?
He says, can we sue the American government? To be sure, Hernandez was in Mexico and is Mexican. The American government said we can't sue them because this is Mexico, not the United States. We're saying, no, the bullet originated in the United States, and they have to pay for the injustice they did.
Galindo goes on. We are saying there are certain laws and certain ways the Border Patrol agents need to treat human beings, Mexican or American, according to United States laws.
Sergio's mom pleads to God for help, for justice. This is going to haunt me until I leave this world. Sergio's parents sued Agent Mesa in federal court for excessive use of force. They claim Mesa violated Sergio's rights under the Fourth and Fifth Amendments.
Now, here's a reminder of what those are. Faulkner professor Melvin Odie.
Okay, so, you know, the Fourth Amendment and the Fifth Amendment each sort of presents a bundle of rights. But the Fourth Amendment in particular presents a list of restrictions on government agents who are investigating crimes. Okay, so the prominent one is a protection against unreasonable searches and seizures.
the court has interpreted seizure to include killing, the taking of a human life.
In this case, the parents would have been saying this was an unreasonable search and seizure.
The Fifth Amendment includes several clauses, the relevant one.
But there's a catch-all near the end of the Fifth Amendment that says a person can't be deprived of life, liberty, or property without due process of law. So in this case, the young man's life was taken. And the Fifth Amendment says you can't do that without due process of law, without fundamentally fair legal proceedings.
The first time this case worked its way through the court system, the Fifth U.S. Circuit Court of Appeals dismissed the case. It held Sergio's parents were not entitled to Fourth and Fifth Amendment protections under various legal doctrines.
But the Supreme Court said the Fifth Circuit improperly applied those legal doctrines. So it vacated the decision, rendered it null and void. That was Hernandez 1 in 2017.
The Supreme Court then remanded the case with specific instructions. It said another question needed to be addressed first. Is a Bivens remedy available? The Fifth Circuit said no, and this Supreme Court appeal followed, Hernandez 2.
But wait, what is a Bivens remedy? For that, let's go back to 1971. That's when the Supreme Court heard the case Bivens v. Six Unknown Named Agents. Federal drug agents entered Webster Bivens' New York home without a warrant. The agents shackled Bivens in front of his family, interrogated him, and strip-searched him.
Bivens sued the agents for money damages. He said they violated his Fourth Amendment rights. The problem with that?
Let's assume for the sake of argument that that's true, that they had violated his Fourth Amendment right. There was no statutory provision that would allow him to sue and be awarded damages. So if they had violated his constitutional rights, there was no statutory remedy for that violation.
Now, other remedies were available. Keep in mind that we have both criminal and civil law in this country. For example, in a criminal proceeding, the federal agents would not be able to use any of the drugs they seized unlawfully as evidence in court. But that doesn't remedy the injuries to Webster Bivens' civil claim. Bivens wanted a different remedy, a fair fix of money damages.
Yeah, money for physical injuries, property damage, emotional harm, to help make him whole. But no law permitted that. As it happens, a law known as Section 1983 lets a person bring a civil lawsuit against a state or local government official who uses excessive force.
But no federal equivalent statute exists. The drug agents in the Bivens case were federal employees, not state or local. We called up another constitutional law expert. Barry McDonald explains.
The problem is, in this context, Section 1983, which, you know, provides damages actions against state and local officials, does not cover federal officers. And so the Supreme Court was essentially faced with the question of whether they should create a private remedy, a monetary damage remedy against federal officers for violations of a citizen's constitutional rights.
In other words, a judge-made remedy instead of one passed by Congress. And the court did create that implied cause of action. It said Bivens was entitled to money damages. Melvin Odey again.
That's why it's called a Bivens action, because Bivens is the case where the Supreme Court recognized there was no remedy and they just made one.
Border Patrol agents are also federal employees. So is a Bivens remedy available to Sergio's parents? That's the question.
And that's the only question before the Supreme Court, whether Hernandez's parents are entitled to a Bivens remedy.
But here's where it gets tricky. It's so hard to listen to the oral arguments without wondering, does Sergio have Fourth and Fifth Amendment rights? A Mexican citizen standing on Mexican soil shot by a U.S. federal agent standing on U.S. soil.
Even the Supreme Court justices kept sliding into that question. Throughout the morning, they had to remind each other, assume he did, even though he may not. Justice Ruth Bader Ginsburg.
The victim, Hernandez, this court has said, I think, that a non-citizen who's injured abroad doesn't have any Fourth Amendment rights.
Justice Stephen Breyer.
I thought we're taking this case on the assumption that the Fourth Amendment does apply.
Whether Sergio had constitutional rights remains an unsettled question. Lawyer Stephen Vladek represented Sergio's parents at oral argument. In an interview after the case, he explained.
The weird thing about this case from the get-go is that most people think it's a referendum on whether the Constitution applies at and across the border, and it really never was. It was actually a much bigger referendum on whether, assuming the Constitution does apply, are victims of unconstitutional actions, like what Agent Mesa was alleged to have done, entitled to a remedy in the federal courts.
If the court holds that Sergio's parents are entitled to a Bivens remedy, then the question becomes, did Sergio have constitutional rights? Now, it seems backwards to ask the remedy question first, but there is a reason the analysis is done this way.
If there's no remedy, then these cases can't go forward whether or not there's an ultimate case on the merits.
If no Bivens remedy?
If there's no cause of action question, there's no need to reach the far thornier, messier question of how the Constitution applies to a cross-border shooting.
So, how to determine whether a Bivens remedy applies? Well, the court uses a two-part inquiry. Barry McDonald lays it out.
Now the court has developed this two-part test to say, well, is it a new context or not? If it is, then we have to ask, are there special circumstances that would caution courts against extending a Bivens cause of action into that new context?
First, does this claim present a new context? Is it different in meaningful ways from previous Bivens cases?
The parties hashed that out during oral argument. Here's Justice Breyer questioning Randolph Ortega. Ortega represented Agent Mesa.
So we know this place by picture. It's a culvert. It's a big culvert, like here to the end of the room. And there's a bridge. And across this bridge, hundreds, perhaps thousands of people walk each day on their way to work or on their way home. Now, a border agent who's standing near the bridge picks up a gun and shoots one of them.
If Sergio, a Mexican citizen, had been on American soil?
I take it you agree that you can bring a Bivens action.
That's correct.
If Sergio had been an American on Mexican soil.
And on the other side, you agree he can bring a Bivens action.
That would be correct, Your
Honor. Okay. So the only person who cannot bring a Bivens action.
Is a Mexican person on Mexican soil.
And the border agent has no idea whether he's shooting such a person.
That would be correct.
That's it. All right. Now.
A matter of a few feet makes all the difference. That was Ortega's argument. Those few feet, he said, presents a new context.
But there's never been a Bivens action that involves a transnational shooting.
Ah. Chief Justice John Roberts brought up another reason he thought this case presented a new context.
The Border Patrol has conducted an investigation, and it reached the determination that the action of the agent was not contrary to policy. And you would have the courts look into this by providing a Bivens remedy that could well come to the opposite conclusion.
When Justice Roberts refers to an investigation, he's talking about the fact that the Department of Justice opened an investigation into Agent Mesa's actions. Here's former Attorney General Eric Holder at a press conference talking about that investigation before the case made its way to the court system.
First, let me express our sincere regrets about the loss of life. The matter is under investigation, and we'll have to determine exactly what happened. Who, if anyone, should be held responsible, what the circumstances were for the shooting, and all of that is just a part of this ongoing investigation.
The Department of Justice declined to bring criminal charges against Mesa. Its report concluded Mesa acted in self-defense. Vladek, representing Sergio's parents, talked about a glaring problem.
So when the federal government investigates one of its own officers and concludes that there's no wrongdoing, that ought to be the end of the story. That shouldn't be satisfactory to anybody because it is ultimately not up to the executive branch whether an officer of the executive branch has violated the Constitution.
Yeah, a bit of a fox in the henhouse situation there. That aside, given that the DOJ concluded no wrongdoing, Chief Justice Roberts continues with his concern.
So that in terms of our relations with Mexico, we'd have one agency saying this was not inconsistent with policy. We'd have the court saying it is. And that is the type of thing that it makes it at least a new context. You can say it doesn't make a difference. But in terms of our relations with Mexico, they've got two different things. And at least with respect to foreign relations, I thought the country was supposed to speak with one voice.
Government lawyer Jeffrey Wall also argued in support of Agent Mesa. He returned to that point Roberts made in an exchange with Justice Elena Kagan.
Justice Kagan, you really think that the next time we go in to talk to Mexico and we take a position on something at the border, they won't say, how is your representation credible? You told us last time that your officer didn't do anything wrong, and your own courts, potentially even your Supreme Court, told you you were wrong. I think it does directly undermine the credibility of the executive branch in working with a foreign government. But even if you thought I were wrong, you still know when
Chappelle... Why wouldn't the United States then say, you know, we live in a country in which courts play an important role in determining whether conduct is lawful.
So even if the judicial branch comes to a different conclusion...
And that's not an embarrassment to the United States or to the executive branch.
Those were some of the arguments for why this case presented a new context. Ultimately, the court decided it was a new context, that there is a world of difference between Webster Bivens' arrest in New York City and a cross-border shooting. That means it moves on to part two of its two-step inquiry.
Are there special factors that provide good reasons not to extend Bivens? Fladek, lawyer for Sergio's parents, says no special factors prevent the court from allowing a Bivens remedy here.
The fortuity of where a victim is standing does not in fact trigger any of the special factors counseling hesitation identified by respondent or the United States, nor does extraterritoriality cut against a Bivens remedy here. Not only was respondent standing on U.S. soil when he pulled the trigger, but he could not have known in that instant where the bullet would even land, let alone the nationality of anyone it might hit. Second, and as importantly, for petitioners here, it is Bivens or nothing.
Agent Mesa's attorney argued foreign affairs and national security concerns are special factors, but he ran into pressure from Justice Ginsburg and Justice Sonia Sotomayor.
But here we have a rogue officer acting in violation of the agency's own instruction, using excessive force to kill a child at play. How does that call into question any foreign policy or national security policy?
Well, it would create a chilling effect as to the Border Patrol agents in conducting their day-to-day activities.
Doesn't that happen if the shooting happened in our own land? Meaning a Border Patrol agent who sees a child at play and kills him 2 feet from the line is not chilled. He knows he can't do that. What makes it chilling to tell a Border Patrol agent, don't shoot indiscriminately at children standing a few feet from the border?
Justice Neil Gorsuch wanted to know, if Bivens is extended here, what's the limiting principle? Limiting principle is a phrase tossed around a lot in Supreme Court cases. How far should a power or right extend?
You draw a line there actively in this case and say that any actions involving military operations, diplomatic operations, any other operations of government are not, there's no Bivens action there. It's only for law enforcement, whatever that means, operations.
Ortega, again representing Agent Mesa, ran with Gorsuch's opening. If Bivens were extended in this cross-border case,
it would never end. It would be no different than a drone pilot in Colorado hitting the wrong village in Syria.
New context, special factors. That is the two-step inquiry. Yet the biggest problem might be something else entirely. The Supreme Court has not extended Bivens in decades. Vladek had to convince the justices to expand it here. Here's Justice Roberts and Vladek at oral argument. We've edited the comments for brevity.
You referenced the government's position in Bivens. That was almost 50 years ago. In the interim, there's been a fairly dramatic change in how we approach things as implying causes of action, both under statutes and under Bivens. I mean, it's been, what, 40 years, right, since the last time we recognized a cause of action in Bivens?
We certainly recognize that this court has been increasingly skeptical of judge-made causes of action in general, and of Bivens in particular. Our point is simply that that skepticism has been reserved, or at least focused, on categories unlike this one. None of those involved a claim that an individual federal law enforcement officer was acting ultra vires.
This is a heartbreaking case, and a hard one. A 5-4 decision, so not a slam dunk. A decision in favor of Agent Mesa and against Sergio's parents. Justice Samuel Alito delivered the opinion. Roberts, Thomas, Gorsuch, and Kavanaugh joined.
And Jenny, you and I were in the courtroom when that decision came down. I think both of our jaws just dropped to the floor when we heard Justice Alito announce the opinion.
Yes, we listened with rapt attention. We knew we'd be covering that case. I was scribbling in my notebook like mad. Well, Justice Alito said a cross-border shooting does involve a new context, and special factors provide good reasons not to extend Bivens, such as national security.
Also, foreign relations provide special factors. Alito said the United States has interests. Mexico has interests. Quote, it's not our task to arbitrate between the two. Alito also made a point to say that Congress has remained silent on damage awards for injury inflicted outside our borders. He said even Section 1983 doesn't extend beyond the borders. That's the statute that applies to state and local agents.
Justice Ginsburg filed a dissent, joined by Breyer, Sotomayor, and Kagan. Justice Ginsburg said Sergio's parents would have a Bivens claim had the bullet hit their son while he was running down the United States side of the embankment. So the fact that he was a few feet over the border, quote, should not matter one whit. The conduct, the shooting, took place in the United States, she said. Here's what Melvin Odi said about this whole situation.
Well, I think this is not something to celebrate. There's something missing, right? And here's what could be a simple fix for what's missing. The legislature could create a cause of action or the possibility for a civil remedy for persons situated outside the United States who are harmed by actions taken by folks who are inside the United States.
Con law educator Barry McDonald agrees, but Congress might not be in a hurry to do its job as the lawmaking branch.
Politicians today are just not wanting to make these difficult public policy decisions that may threaten their reelection, and so they're punting them to judges who serve for lifetimes.
And that's something the average American should be concerned about. We should make sure we have wise legislators who will do their jobs, hard jobs, such as addressing the murky issue of whether and when government officials should be accountable for constitutional violations.
This is a situation that sort of cries out for at least the family to have its day in court. And so these are tough issues on all around.
Faulkner Professor Odi sees the nuance. It feels like justice wasn't done. And yet,
how do you open the door just wide enough so that somebody like Sergio's parents could be compensated without overwhelming our system with claims from all over the world?
Legal Docket is produced by the creative team at World Radio. I'm Mary Reichert.
And I'm Jenny Ruff. We're the hosts each week.
Our script editors are Nick Eicher and JC Derrick. Technical engineer is Rich Rosel with production assistance from Matt Hawkins. Our producer is Paul Butler.
Thanks so much to everyone who's written in the last few weeks. We love hearing from our listeners. Our email address is legaldocket@wng.org. Also, a big thanks to everyone who subscribed to the podcast and left reviews. That's a big help for getting the word out about this very special podcast.
Thanks for listening, and join us again next week.
Just a few episodes left in Legal Docket Season 1. We've been presenting it each Saturday here on the World and Everything In It feed. Episode 8 airs next week, September 19th. But we also release Legal Docket as a standalone series, and we publish new episodes on that feed every Tuesday. So if you'd like to listen sooner or help others find this new series, you can subscribe by searching for Legal Docket on Apple Podcasts, Stitcher, or wherever you listen.